Good evening. You are listening to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station. I'm Nicholas Miller, here, as always, with the inimitable Steve Cato. Why don't you say hi, Steve Cato?
I'm Steve Cato. Hello. I'm Steve Cato.
Right. Right. Yeah, we've had some weird weather this week, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, that weird has mostly been very nice, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Most of you know that Steve doesn't really have birthdays.
No.
Being as that he was born, oh, what is that day called at the end of February?
A leap day.
Right, right. Leap day. Sorry. But even though Steve didn't have a birthday this year, there was a small gathering last Saturday that I attended. And for those of you who aren't here in the studio with us, I gotta say, Steve's legs looking pretty crisp. Nice, Steve. Have you been cycling?
Oh, yeah. No, I've been cycling a whole lot because the weather's so nice. So
don't be shy.
Yeah, thank you. Check those out.
Yeah. So, Steve, did you hear the big news this week about the current president of the United States?
I shudder to think what you could be referring to. Are you talking about the egregious health care plan that he has recently just floated? Is that what you're talking about?
Right. There was that too. But the news I was talking about was that he released his tax documents and paid something like $35 million in taxes last year.
Well, they weren't last year's taxes. They were like 2005 taxes, I believe. And yeah, he paid $30 million or something like that in taxes. Yeah, that year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an astronomical number.
Yeah.
Astronomical.
Well, make a lot of money.
Well, speaking of astronomy, that leads pretty cleanly into our guest tonight. Tonight we have a whole crew in here. The studio is brimming with people. From the Hollywood area of Los Angeles. And we have to warn our dedicated listeners. We know that you come to this show for talking, not for music. There are plenty of shows out there you could listen to, even on K-Chung, that deal with music. And we're going to say we're sorry. I know we have to say this all the time. There's going to be some music tonight.
Jesus Christ.
The music is in service of the talking.
Bullshit.
So we think that's okay. Anyhow, tonight we have the cast and crew of episode 28 of Men into Space.
The age of the conquest of space will be an age of men and machines probing far beyond our Earth. And just as some machines will probe deeply into space, others will probe the men who will travel in space. Yet put to the ultimate test, no amount of machinery will ever be able to determine the measure of a man's inner strength. For within each of us, there is a voice of infinity.
Executive officer.
Major? Captain?
You know, if that equipment you're bringing aboard works as well on human beings as safety devices do on machines, it's going to cut our accident rate a great deal.
I think it will, sir. After all, the human body is a machine. If you can put safety devices on machines, you can put them on human bodies, too.
Emergency! Emergency! All personnel, take emergency stations. Take emergency stations. Personnel emergency stations.
Number three pump off.
Three pump off?
Cut in the automatic.
Automatic in. Weight distribution normal, sir.
Spin?
Even normal.
All right. All clear, Major.
Yes, sir. Attention. Attention. All clear. All clear.
I want a full report.
You know what it'll say.
Human error.
has all the earmarks of one of those over-control errors by the operator.
We can be lucky it was a minor one. Take over.
Yes.
Whew, quite a reception, Colonel.
Let's hope our equipment will prevent such errors. Let's plan on it, Major. By the way, when you get set up, I'd like to have you give our men a demonstration of how your gadgets work.
Yes, sir. Where do you want us to set up?
Come with me.
First trip up here, Captain?
Yes, it is. It's a great way to lose weight.
Artificial gravity pull only gives us about 3/4 Earth normal. You'll get used to it.
Oh, I feel like a ball in a roulette wheel.
What's your outfit, sir?
Space medicine. Major Hawks is a psychiatrist who specializes in bioinstrumentation.
Psychiatrist? So where's his count?
He won't need one on this job. We've got quite a different piece of equipment. Jones, we've got you wired.
Okay, Doc, bring on the building blocks.
Tell him why you have Jones wired this way.
Well, gentlemen, every man has a stamina limitation beyond which he cannot function efficiently. A fatigue threshold, if you like, during which time he may become accident prone. Now, through the use of those transducers, we can determine exactly when a man reaches that point. And Captain Reed will be more explicit.
Well, in this case, the transducers are tiny sensors that continuously measure all kinds of different physical factors. Your blood pressure, temperature, respiration, heartbeat, perspiration rate, and so on.
And from now on, whenever you have difficult or dangerous duty, you'll be wired the same way as Jones is.
The information giving us a picture of the physical and emotional state is sent to our panel here by that little transmitter.
Medical walkie-talkie.
Yeah, that's about it.
So how am I doing here, Doc?
Well, we can read it on our main indicator. Where we see right now that Airman Jones, believe it or not, is quite normal.
That's right. However, if anything should occur to upset his stability, to increase stress and tension to a point where he could become accident prone, we'd know immediately, simply by watching the panel.
From now on, this equipment will be SOP for all duty personnel. We'll set up a scheduled job classifications later on.
Yes, sir.
Back to your station, then.
You better not try that wiring job on me, Doc.
Oh, why not?
I run on DC.
And the plates we exposed of Galaxy A-12 are being developed now. That wraps up phase two of my report.
Call in, Dr. Ward.
Hello.
Major.
Colonel, why aren't the civilian scientists listed on this chart? I understand some of them are doing critical work.
Yes, that's right. I allowed them to be exempt from wearing the transducers.
Exempt what?
Well, I talked it over with the doctor, and I agree with his point of view.
Well, no offense, but how could Dr. Ward's point of view be important enough to cripple my experiments?
Doctor?
Major, we don't object to wearing them. We just can't be governed by them.
Why not? Everyone else on the station will be.
Because some of us are doing critical experiments, producing reactions which, once started, we have to stick with to the end.
Nevertheless, I say you should wear the transducers. Then, if my instruments indicate you've reached a critical physiological or psychological level, you'll be asked to stop work.
Scientific research, if it's to mean anything, requires freedom, imagination, even inspiration. Qualities that are often born from the same physical and mental tensions which you fear. Our mistakes, or accidents, if you prefer, have a way of turning out profitably.
Colonel McCauley, will you change your decision?
No, I'm afraid not, Major.
Well, then, sir, I must conclude you're hampering my work up here for some reason.
Major, I'm sure that your work up here is of extreme importance as long as it remains within the proper perspective. We can't underestimate the human mechanism. I have seen men whom you would consider in the critical zone call on some inner strength to see them through, something that your equipment can't measure.
Such times are too rare to worry about.
It's been said that within every man there's a voice of infinity.
Perhaps, sir. But with my instruments, I know almost as much about a man as his creator.
My decision is final.
Colonel McCauley, in my opinion, you are being arbitrary. I trust you realize I must include that in my report.
Major, I suggest that you go back to your quarters, cool off, and learn to live within the restrictions I've placed on your work.
Yes, sir.
Colonel, if he had been wearing one of his own transducers just then, I bet his panel would have lit up like a Christmas tree.
I
space station Astra revolved steadily in orbit 1,075 miles above the Earth, all personnel performing hazardous tasks were kept under constant check by instrumentation, which would immediately indicate whether each man was capable of completing his assigned duty.
Major Connell, this is Dr. Hawks. Sergeant Griner has entered the critical zone.
He should be replaced.
Right, Doctor. I'll replace him with Saunders.
Good.
In the vacuum of space, small rockets on the rim of the space wheel ensured a constant spin, which provided the space station with a synthetic gravity. Work teams constantly checked and realigned the intricate computing devices and mechanisms that had to perform with unerring accuracy. So exacting was this work, there was no margin for error, and technicians were immediately replaced when instrumentation showed them incapable of performing efficiently.
Colonel?
How long have you been out there?
A little over 2 hours, sir. Saunders has just taken over in place of Griner.
How's it going?
Fine, sir.
When do you expect to finish?
About a half hour, sir.
Okay, keep after it. I think I'll go out and inspect that job myself when it's finished. I'll need to be wired.
Yes, sir.
Reed, put Colonel McCauley on position 4.
Major Hawks, take a look.
Major Connell, this is Dr. Hawks. Airman Jones is on the edge of the critical zone.
All right, stand by. Saunders, this is Major Connell.
How near finished are you and Jones?
This is Saunders. Outside work finished, sir.
This is Jones, sir. I'm just now getting ready to hook up the terminals.
This is Saunders. Jones has the first terminal hooked up, sir.
Major Connell, this is Dr. Hawks. Jones is extremely critical now. He should be replaced.
Jones, this is Major Connell. Stop work and return to station.
We'd lose a lot of time if some other joker had to work himself into this crazy spot, sir. I'll get it and I'll come right in.
Major Connell, this is Dr. Hawks. I repeat, Jones is critical.
Well, Well, wired for son. What's the matter?
Take a look at this.
Jones, this is Colonel McCauley. Report back immediately.
Yes, sir.
Airman Jones, report to me in the observatory as soon as you come through the airlock.
Yes, sir.
Why didn't you stop work at once and report back here as you were ordered?
I was practically finished, sir. To have waited for another man to come out there would have meant a long delay.
Well, there's no harm done this time. The next time. Report to your duty station. You two stay here.
Yes, sir.
All personnel, emergency station.
What's the damage?
Rotation control rocket 7 fired spontaneously. Increased the speed of our spin and our gravity.
Yeah, 1.1. What caused it?
We don't know. Several controls and instruments went out.
Get me Earth Control.
Yes?
This is McCauley. I want all personnel in space suits and helmets right away.
Stay on general communications band. I repeat, all personnel in space suits and helmets right away.
All right, Reed. You get into your spacesuit, I'll watch the panel.
All right.
I have Earth Control, sir.
Flip it to this mic. This is Space Station Astra to Earth Control. We have a runaway rotation rocket. Station in jeopardy, situation critical. I repeat, situation critical.
Saunders, this is McCauley.
This is Saunders, yes, sir.
What happened?
Apparently, Jones hooked up the terminals backward. That overloaded the circuits. When they blew, the whole panel burned out.
How long will it take to repair it?
2 to 3 hours, sir.
All right. Get back to the station.
Yes, sir.
Get a new repair team out there as fast as you can.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, Colonel. Well, the accident created a short circuit of the control wires of the rocket. Intermittent short circuit, it may fire again.
Can you use the retro-rotation rocket?
I could if I had the correct calculations of the rotation computers. They're burned out. They're dead.
Each time the thrust rockets on the space station fired, the spin of the wheel increased. If it continued, the space station and the men in it would be unable to withstand the tremendous forces being exerted on them.
Gravity 2.5 times normal.
This is Saunders, Colonel.
Mrs. McCauley, come in.
Sir, the repair team is unable to work. They've had to withdraw.
If that rocket keeps firing...
We'll have to stop it now. Neutralize the spin before it's too late.
Without instruments, without computer calculations.
How much more can he take?
The instruments tell the story, Jim. He can't keep on making the right decisions.
I'm afraid we don't stand a chance.
I'm switching to general communications. Wall personnel, this is Colonel McCauley. I want you all to know what our exact situation is. The runaway rotation rocket is giving us a faster spin, increasing our centrifugal gravity pull. Right now, you weigh twice normal at 2.4 gravity. At 3 gravity, you'll weigh close to 600 pounds. We've had to abandon the repair work. The space station will have to be slowed down before we can finish. We can do this by firing a retro-rotation rocket at exact thrust. But this is impossible because the computers needed to give us the figures are dead. I'll have to make a guess, an educated guess, but nonetheless a guess. If I'm right, we're okay. If I'm wrong, I may set up a wobble in our spin that'll tear this station apart. We have no other choice.
With his own body weighing more than he ever thought possible due to the increased gravity, Colonel McCauley summoned all his inner strength. His brain alone had to tell him what the dead computers could not. The correct rocket thrust needed to save the madly spinning space station. While in the minds of the men who sat helplessly crushed by the same invisible force, there arose the question, could McCauley, already strained far beyond his normal breaking point, make the correct decision?
I can't. Too late. Nothing we can do.
The generators. Too much weight. Friction.
We're losing our power.
Colonel McCauley, this is Hawks.
Here, I'll come in.
The indicator shows you far beyond the top critical point.
That we had a few days ago when I said that there's a voice of infinity in every man.
Colonel, my inner voice is telling me I can get out of this spacesuit now.
Well, your inner voice must be short-circuited because we're going to stay in them until the repair work is completed. Speaking of repair work, let's start right here.
I got openers. I'll take three.
I'll take two. I used to be able to bluff you easy.
You know, until Jones figures out exactly what's happening, his poker game isn't going to be too successful.
It's amazing how fast the human mind can figure out a way to quickly debase its finest achievements.
You know, I'd call it kind of a bonus side effect. Jones has bluffed Saunders out of thousands of washes since they started their tour of duty up here. Incidentally, that's going to make the odds on the success of our work up here a lot closer to even. Any coffee left?
Sure, man.
You think of that?
I don't know, Nicholas. You love this theater stuff. That's what I think. Jeez.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Jeez, Nick.
Right. Well,
music.
Before we get too deep into what men do in space.
Yeah, jeez.
we've brought an expert
in
tonight.
Nice.
All the way from Irvine, California to talk a little bit about how men that desire outer space talk. So tonight we have the defatigable, the ever-worthy Arielle McLeese.
So my dad is, or was, the chief scientist of JPL, which is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, as they like to say on Dexter's lab or laboratory. I remember that from a while ago. And these men that desire space, they do so in a pretty strange way. It's not the best environment for social graces. My mom, she likes to cook a lot. And there was a period in their marriage where they would host dinner parties with my dad's colleagues at Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And she would work really hard cooking for days. And about 30 scientists, never engineers. That's very important. They don't like engineers. So these 30 scientists would come over. And the social interactions, the desire for social interaction, or rather lack thereof, was so intense that you'll never really experience anything quite like it. My favorite example was coming into one of these dinner parties and seeing a scientist lying on the ground with my golden retriever, eating a box of chicken wings that he had brought for himself from Pizza Hut down the street. He explained from the floor, lying down with my dog, that he liked to bring his own food because he didn't know where food came from. So he ate the chicken wings, lay on the floor with my golden retriever, which he explained made him feel more comfortable in social environments. And that's where he spent the whole of the evening. These dinner parties didn't last very long, but they'll last in my mind forever.
Wow, thanks. Mm. Thanks, Ariel. That was significant and very informative. You know, I had a brief brush with science, but I ran screaming because of some of those very same forms of talking. It just wasn't a good way to talk to people.
Right.
Science, that is.
I wouldn't know.
But I am curious about space. Mm. I don't know. What do you think, Steve?
I am totally curious about space. I would love to be in zero gravity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
It'd be great.
Yeah, it's, you know, the people we had on tonight, those scientists, those astronauts.
Yes.
They were talking.
Yes.
Their talk was from a different time. You know, it sounded like something from the 1960s. And it was interesting to hear that even people who talk in that way still think of the human body as a kind of machine. That idea must have been around for a long time. What do you think about that idea, Steve? I know you drink Soylent. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of mechanization of the body, I feel like, inherent in that product. What are your thoughts with your Soylent and all your cycling?
Well, you know, I think that there's one thing to say, which is that a product like Soylent and the way those men talked about science, you know, tapping out, you know, knowing when you've reached your limits, I think that both of those products are aiming at a kind of industrial standardization. And I think that that's what, you know, one of the astronauts in the talking today, and what many of the people who seem to just object to Soylent on principle do object to. I think that, you know, believe it or not, I'm aware that all bodies are different. I got into the Soylent thing because I felt I was really tired of deciding what to eat. And I wanted to be completely nourished. I didn't want to be incompletely nourished. Which means different things for different people. Different people process different resources differently. So I went on, it took me a long time. I spent a lot of trial and error time developing my own blend of nutrients, etc., following the example of the guy who invented Soylent, but, you know, factually basing it on quite something different. It was like pretty expensive as a hobby. But I mean, it's easy to see how a mechanized, how the metaphor of mechanization makes sense vis-a-vis the body. Like the body processes fuel, the body takes things in and does stuff with it, and then spits it out the other end. And having said that, I mean, like, the body is a different thing for everyone. And so that's where the analogy towards the mechanized breaks down, is in the sort of broad individual varying of people. I'm sure there are some people who can function great on little sleep and all that other stuff, right? So yeah, the Soylent situation, I feel like the company's in on the joke. Like, they just launched a store on the deep web. You know, like, they know, and they know that you know, and they know that, you know, when you know that they know, and then they know, you know. I think it's a little, they named their product Soylent, right?
Right. Well, to quote one of our fearless heroes tonight, Steve, I suggest you go back to your quarters and learn how to live with the restrictions that society places on your work.
I will not.
Yeah. You know, our talkers tonight reminded me of this new hip idea of the Anthropocene.
Oh, God. Right,
which is this new epoch where we have an effect on the natural world. We can, in a sense, wound the natural world.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm a little ambivalent about that formulation. You know, clearly things are a little messed up, but I just wonder if it proposes a kind of uncritical humanism, you know, to you know, put such a reliance on our capacity to consume nature. I think maybe that's my issue with it, is that it foregrounds consumption in such a way that something like gas companies could reabsorb this logic and use it to sell us things. Mm. It's not a formulation of our relationship with nature that could break with our fantasy that we dominate nature.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, right? Because so much of what we view as climate change, a man-made climate change, is in fact nature reacting to us, not that we are dominating it, but that it is that these physical effects are being provoked in it's a conversation. I do think that there is, you know, in a geological sense, a reason to maintain a concept of the Anthropocene, because there will be a layer when we're gone, when this is all over, when we're through with this bullshit, there will be a layer of gunk upon the earth. There's a layer of plastic on everything now, microplastics, that I think will define, you know, the geologists will be like, and then there's that layer of plastic, and that'll be the Anthropocene. They'll drill through a bunch of, they'll do a core sample, and they'll be like, and then here's where the plastic starts. And that's what, you know, so I think that just in terms of sort of uncaring science, there is a reason to say that, like, oh, this event occurred. These people on Earth invented material that somehow got everywhere. That, I think, is a justification for the term. I think in the expanded form in which people often discuss the Anthropocene, I think you're right to feel skeptical, though. I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that was probably the best lesson from our talkers tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they closed their talking with that great line, isn't it amazing how quickly the human mind can debase its achievements.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't that the second last line?
No, 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 you're right. That actually wasn't the very last line.
That's
that was
right.
the second to last
yeah.
line.
Yeah.
And
that's what I'm saying.
The last line was even more critical. It was, is there any coffee left?
But ching. There's no coffee left here, folks. It is so late at night.
Right. Well, this is The Talking Show, signing off. Good morning, Chinatown.